Using your voice moves the needle on your visibility index, that internal guidance system that is asking your soul to stretch and grow. So how do we speak up around controversial subjects, especially when the stakes are high? What parts of our story do we tell and to whom? Especially when so many of us have been taught that our experiences are taboo. As a Black biracial woman, Renee Bracey Sherman didn't see herself reflected among the people who talked about abortion and reproductive rights in the media. So she started talking. And then she started teaching other women to tell their stories too.
My name is Renee Bracey Sherman, and this is a lesson on sharing your stories.
Renee, what is your earliest memory of being creative?
I always think about this, I don't know why, but I had to present at Harriet Tubman, and I remember cutting out little houses to present on the Underground Railroad and just thinking, again, talking with my mom, who's Black, about what happened during slavery and seeing her crying when we read the Addie books and all of those things, but it's not quite totally understanding why she was crying as I was reading this book, in particular the section in the Addie book where the enslaver forces Addie to eat the bugs on the cotton because she didn't get enough off of the cotton or the tobacco leaves, whatever it was. But also being able to learn about what happened and then being able to translate that and talk about it with my classmates and being able to make a project.
And how old were you?
I was in first or second grade.
Are you the only child of color in your class at that point, or are there others?
No, I went to a school that was quite racially diverse, and it was actually named after Martin Luther King. And so I remember every year we had to do, I mean, there were like 2-3 days worth of assemblies for Martin Luther King Day. Like, it was right. Huge. Racial justice was really
And you
popular.
Grew up in Chicago.
Yeah, a suburb of Chicago. And yeah. It's funny that those are some of my earliest memories of, because they're like school, right? It's work. But it was a way in which that you can learn and be creative and tell stories about how we got somewhere and in our history and what's the world we want to change. And it's funny because that feels like what I do now.
That's probably why it resonated so deeply with you, because that storytelling has made its way into your work.
Mm-hmm.
So I love this quote from Maya Angelou, which she says, "There's no agony like bearing an untold story
Absolutely.
Inside of you."
Absolutely.
And so storytelling has become a key part of the way that you teach and a way that you help people to share things that are perhaps unspeakable.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you find your way to this work?
It's funny that you...
After kindergarten.
Yeah.
Because clearly you were doing it there.
You're reading this Maya Angelou quote about the burden of an untold story. That is something that I felt so heavy when I had not shared my abortion story. And I remember when I first told my mother that I'd had an abortion and I met other people who'd had abortions who inspired me to talk about it. That was a weight that I felt so lifted. And I felt freed, even though nothing in the world had really changed, but I had changed and I had felt supported and I felt like I wasn't carrying that weight and that burden of this secret that I was not at all ashamed about, but I felt like I couldn't talk about and I was told I couldn't talk about it. And so I wanted to be able to lift that for other people.
And you were told, would you say culturally you were told not to talk about it? What gave you the sense that this was a taboo topic?
That's what's complicated about it, because I grew up in a family where we were supportive of abortion. I remembered hearing my mom say to one of my friends in high school that she thought abortion was a viable option. And I knew that we were Democrats. I knew we were pro-choice. I knew we supported Planned Parenthood. Like, I knew those things. And yet still felt like I couldn't talk about my abortion, because I couldn't talk about the fact that I had gotten pregnant by this boyfriend that my parents did not like. And so I felt like that would be this, I told you so moment, and that they would be mad at me for getting pregnant by him, not for the abortion.
What's interesting is what you said. You were more concerned about them judging you for potentially being impregnated or knocked up by that boyfriend that they didn't like. Sometimes the weight of those secrets or the weight of other people's perceptions, or not sometimes, most times, is what prevents us from actually speaking our truth or sharing our story. If you were going to offer some ways that people could begin to rip the Band-Aid off and start speaking those truths, I know we've got the feeling why, but how would they begin to do that?
Yeah, that's such a good question, and one that I get asked a lot. People think, okay, so I go from not talking about my abortion or a stigmatized experience to just all of a sudden, what, talking about it on TV like you do? And I'm like, there's steps. My organization, we testify. We work with people who've had abortions to share their stories. When we're working with folks before they go public to talk about their abortion, we have a retreat and it's closed so that we can recreate that bit of a safe hug where you can step into it and share your story and talk about what aspects you want to talk about, especially the things that you think you're going to be shamed for, and meet someone else who's gone through something quite similar in that same safe space. So I would suggest that you try to find other people who have those similar experiences so you can walk through that and have that before you start talking to the people that thinking about telling them your story might make you feel a little bit nervous. Does that make sense?
It does. Also, what you've said here, which is what is important too, about what parts of the story are you going to tell? Because there will be people who will ask you parts of your story you don't want to speak about. Or as an example, I had cancer and many years ago, but when I had it, I was very silent about it because sometimes I would come up against somebody who did know it and they would confront me or ask me a question about it in a space that I wasn't prepared for or at a time I wasn't prepared for. And I've only started talking about it now, like 20 years later. It just didn't want to. And there is remembering that you don't have to tell your story, but telling your story can give you peace if it's shared in the right place to the right people.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to go on television and tell the story.
Absolutely how you not. Did it. We have this like Fight Club rule of the first rule about We Testify is that you don't have to share your abortion story. And telling people that allows them to feel freer, because in a moment like this, where abortion is extremely under attack, people feel like, ugh, it must be my duty and I have to do this. And then they get pushed into doing it when they're not ready. And so that's something where it's like you were opting in. But then the other piece, like, as you said, yes, that people decide what aspects they'd like to share. Most people assume that I share 100% of my abortion story. I don't. I share about 40% of it. Part of that is because I actually want to keep some of the experience to myself and for myself so that I don't become so jaded and desensitized to it, but also not all of it's your fucking business. And you can keep that for yourself so that it still is a memory in your moment and not something that people, your loved ones, people in the public and the press pick apart, because that's where you become just so desensitized to it.
Knowing a little bit about your story, because you'd mentioned that your boyfriend had been arrested previously. And so that also plays into a cultural narrative about, oh, she did this because of X, Y, or Z. And I don't think we always have consciousness in the moment of why we do something. That's part of the learning of the experience.
The stories that I was encouraged to tell were A, not mine to tell, but B, relied on a lot of anti-Black stereotypes about Black men, poverty, and things like that. And they are facts that were part of the story. But also, I started feeling like I didn't like one, being encouraged in particular by white women to share those things, because I realized like, oh, this is actually racist. But also I didn't like the way in which it justified my abortion and saying, oh, because these things happened to you, you deserved an abortion. Other people who these things didn't happen to, they don't necessarily need an abortion. And I didn't want to participate in the abortion exceptionalism. And so one of the things I would talk to people about when they're thinking about sharing their stories is thinking about what is the message that they'd like to send with their story. And for them, I try to say that the audience is not like, oh, these people you need to convince. Please don't make that your audience, because then you will end up sharing things that you didn't actually want to share or feel comfortable sharing. Your audience, to me, should just be you. What is it that you needed to know to be able to make it through? Because there is another you out there. You need to know how you felt and how you needed to be supported. And so when we focus on that, that's really, really important, because to me, the goal is not to change the minds of people who haven't had abortions. My end goal is always to make sure that people who have had abortions feel supported enough that they can share their stories, and then we can do the culture change and the conversation change that way.
And so the culture change is part of the mission then? Mm-hmm. Because you've been doing this work for over a decade. Absolutely. So the culture change is definitely the end goal for you.
Absolutely. With We Testify. And it's not just, but it's also, how are we represented? How are we represented on television shows and in films? Most characters on television and film who have abortions are white people. They're young, often teenagers. They're wealthy. They're not parenting. The reality of who has abortions, it's overwhelmingly, mostly people of color. 75% are living at or just above the federal poverty level. Most are in their 20s, and 2/3 already have one child. So that is what we're not seeing. I didn't see anyone who looked like me talking about abortion. So I thought I was alone. I didn't think there were other Black girls who'd had abortions. I didn't think there were any other Black biracial girls who had abortions. And that plays into the isolation and the silencing. And so I wish that people understood. I understand they're trying to be well-meaning, but they're actually creating additional harm and throwing the people they're purporting to support under the bus and making it so that we don't have a space to share our abortion stories in the larger conversation.
So let's come back to this piece about speaking again and how sometimes people feel unsafe speaking about a controversial topic because there is someone who, and they might do it with the best of intentions, but there is someone whose experience is the exact antithesis who also has a valid stake in the conversation. And so they feel, this comes up a lot for women, attacked, or they don't like conflict, or they don't like being at the center of it. Are there any sort of things you can offer that would help them feel like continue to use their voice in uncomfortable situations when perhaps the noise coming at them is the opposite of, or is not recognizing the intention with which they're speaking?
Yeah, people would assume that in this work that my opposition is solely people who are anti-abortion, and that's actually not true. There are quite a lot of people who identify as pro-choice who don't necessarily want to hear certain abortion stories because it actually also challenges a narrative that they've already understood about abortion, or that is their own confirmation bias. And that can be really challenging. And so people need to be prepared that the opposition or the uncomfort, the affront can come from anyone. In how to prepare is to really, one, embody strength. So if you're sitting, keeping your feet flat on the floor, I'm right now like holding my shoulders back, right? Because I am trying to make sure that not that my body's stiff, but that it feels strong and that I feel supported physically. Then as I talk about it, I actually speak a lot slower when I'm talking about tough subjects with people or things that might bring conflict. I talk slower because I want to make sure that I'm careful and clear with my words. So that way I'm taking up the space I need to in order to be able to speak, but also that I have the time to process and say exactly what it is that I would like to say and not accidentally say something that I didn't mean because someone is riling me up. And that's what happens when they respond and then you get riled up and you get off your rocker. I don't know if you remember that those bobbled. You have to be one of them, right? Because you're going to get knocked off your rocker and someone's going to say something. I would suggest let them finish what they're going to say, as long as it's not violent and hurting and hurtful towards you, because then just walk away from the conversation. But then take a deep breath and say, I want to be clear about what I'm saying. What I'm saying is my experience is this, right? Listen to your heartbeat. Listen to your breathing. And you are going to get anxious and nervous. That happens, right? That's what happens when we're having high stakes conversations. But really be in tune to your body as you're speaking and also listening to them. I also tell people that it is okay to walk away from a conversation. Just because you share right now does not mean that they're going to understand and agree with you in the moment. I've had people in my life that didn't support me or my work, and it wasn't until years later that they finally had to come around. And some of them, I actually had to separate them from my life for a bit so that I could feel whole. And then we could come back together when they were ready because they did their own work. So again, don't go into any conversation like that thinking that I'm just going to immediately try to change someone's mind, because that's going to be really stressful for you. And then also you're going to get into talking points rather than just sharing how you feel, because I wish that people would just do more listening. And you too, as someone who is sharing, should also do listening, because I promise you there's some things about abortion that you also probably hold that are stigmatizing and maybe incorrect. And you can learn from that too.
You're saying abortion, but I keep hearing race. At
literally all of it.
Politics.
Yes.
Religion. Like literally I'm hearing all the things. Yes. This applies. And what coming up for me is that, and again, just going back to the very reason what you were most worried about in telling your mom, right? Because mm-hmm. you discovered when you told your mom that she too had an abortion, which yes. is what made your life present in this moment. We all have that thing that we think is preventing us from receiving the love of another person. So the abortion was the result, right? Act of whatever somebody did, the whatever crime they did or words they said, or it's the result right. of a certain
way of
being.
Actions and things. Yes.
A series of actions, a series of feelings, a series. And so as humans in telling our stories and in speaking up these unspeakable things, it's really about care of the self mm-hmm. during those moments. And I love what you're saying about standing and staying strong, because it's true. If you're not feeling supported in your body, it's hard to find words to be supported.
And it's hard to push back on something when someone is also saying things that might be harmful to you. There's something I learned through Rockwood. It's a leadership training, and it's called meshing. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but basic fabric mesh where things can just go through it, right? And so a lot of times when I'm having those tough conversations, even when a couple of weeks ago I was abortion-splained by a white dude who was like telling me all these things about abortion that were like literally not true. He was pro-choice. And I was like, sir,
Because he's had one. I was like, I guess that's like, because he's had one. Yeah,
he knows someone. And so I'm standing there and I'm feeling very challenged by this conversation, because I'm telling him from my decade of expertise. I'm telling him from my own experience, from my own work and research. And he's actually disagreeing with me and being like, I don't think so. So I'm feeling actually very tense and frustrated. And so I had to settle my body, right? And then I had to mesh. And meshing means that you let what they say go right through you. And there's some of it that you can keep and hold on to, because you're like, oh, that actually is an interesting point, even if he's wrong on 98% of it. And you can hold on to that. So hold on to what's useful for you. But the rest of it, you just let mesh through you, like water washing over you. And it's a way of not absorbing someone else's anger, frustration, challenges, misinformation, so that it doesn't harm you emotionally. I have a friend of mine, Allison Turcos. She does amazing survivor work. You should totally have her on the podcast. She works with survivors in sharing their stories. And again, there's a lot of resistance to people's experiences and hearing people's truths about their rapes and sexual assault. And you have to be ready for someone to not quite believe you or say, maybe you read the signs wrong, right? Being ready for that, but you can stand strong in your story. And again, let that mesh through you.
So you co-authored a book, Speak Up and Stay Safe, which is a multilingual mm-hmm. digital guide on handling harassment, on digital harassment. Again, part of the fallout is having people come on the attack. And I had read a statistic that when women are attacked online, oftentimes they say things like, we'll slit your throat or we'll strangle you. It's often targeted at the voice mm-hmm. and silencing women, obviously, because we've been told there was a dunking stool, right, in certain times. Like, we've been told to just shut it up. How have you experienced harassment and how have you dealt with it?
Yeah, I have experienced harassment ever since I first shared my abortion story. And I've dealt with harassment being a biracial Black woman in the United States. Like, that's just... it's annoying, but it is just a part of life. And working to change that is critical. And like, none of it is ever going to go away until we eradicate, you know, white supremacy and anti-Blackness. But I definitely started getting targeted harassment online as a result of sharing my abortion story and just sharing my opinions that people who have abortions deserve to be heard and respected and treated thoughtfully, carefully, treated like human beings. And it's been everything from threats of violence and rape to people sending physical things, threatening things to my home. I wrote the guide because I had known Jacqueline Friedman for many years and she was dealing with some harassment. And I was asking her how she was protecting herself. And then she connected me with Anita Sarkeesian, who has dealt with so much harassment, right? And so there was stuff that I learned from them, protecting your address online, like trying to protect against being doxxed. And doxxing is where someone intentionally publishes your private information, your personally identifiable information on the internet with the intent to harm you. So your address, your phone number, sometimes your birthday, your emails, your passwords, whatever. And this has happened to me a number of times. And it's very scary because you don't necessarily know what the level of threat is. But in working with them, I was able to learn ways in which I could protect myself to hide my information from these data broker, data mining sites like White Pages and Spokio and Family Tree Now, which I guess is set up by the Mormons or something. It's very weird. But that information just being available out there is really scary. And there are uses for it in which, like, we use people's information to be able to reach them for voter engagement. So it's really complicated. I use a number of different programs to remove my information from those websites, like Delete Me. I have some lawyers who go and take down photos. A lot of people don't know this, that if you're in the photo, even if it's a profile photo of me, you don't own the copyright to that. The photographer does.
Right, as soon as you... Right.
And so even if I do a selfie, then I own it. So I'm very careful about who takes photos of.
Also, I will say when you upload it to a site, mm-hmm. you often relinquish your copyright,
yes.
which is what the right, that's what they try to get you to say, yes. right? So if somebody else takes it, it's complicated. Sites are very good about getting you to do a takedown notice. You can do some of those things, but still, yes.
It's people can really difficult. And there was this one guy who made an entire website dedicated to hating me.
Oh my God.
And updated it constantly. And he took photos that were available on Facebook and then edited them in very racist ways, anti-Black ways with, I'm not even going to name, but gross. And his argument when we tried to do a takedown notice with him several times was that they were fair use because they had been uploaded to Facebook. That's actually one of the reasons I don't use Facebook anymore. I'm not going to stop living my life. I am still going to post photos.
Well, that's, I guess, my question is making some, that's pretty, they're going out of their way mm-hmm. to disrupt you. How do you keep strong? How do you in your strength mm-hmm. and composure during all of that and keep doing the work?
The honest truth is that I don't always stay calm. I do lose my shit because it's terrifying. And it's okay for people to talk about that and to admit that, because people assume then that, okay, I'm being attacked. I should like take the high road. No, someone is like threatening your life. Like, it's okay to feel scared, and it's okay to lean on the people who are close to you. So I do lose my shit sometimes. And sometimes I stay perfectly calm because I'm like, oh, here we go again. I've been through this, right? The most recent one, I testified before Congress in July. And afterwards, even actually not even just afterwards, during the hearing, I saw that the Republican, it was called their RNC Research Twitter account. So it's the Republican National Party's, Republican National Committee's party's Twitter account was tweeting out videos of me from the hearing and purposely misinterpreting what I said and basically saying that I believe that Black people are better off aborted than living, right? And there were like 7 people testifying that day. I was the only one they tweeted out videos of. I was the only Black person on that panel. I was the only one who said that I'd had an abortion. And so in the middle of the hearing, I'm getting threatening emails and messages and tweets and all sorts of stuff. And normally it's okay, sit here, focus, you have a job to do. And then I was like, why? They keep talking about the attacks on crisis pregnancy centers, which have been found to be fraudulent. And so I just straight up during my testimony was like, I'd like to point out that I'm getting death threats right now from this hearing because the Republican Party is tweeting out videos from me from their account right now. And that's the most that I could do and I could say about it, right? No!
Did it stop it?
Of course not. Because
Yeah. And then also what's interesting is that like they're happy to lie. They're happy to say, to give misinformation.
It was interesting because they didn't want to admit that it was happening in the moment. And they even casted doubt on whether or not I said it. I was like, and I held it. I was like, it's right here. And they were like, if these threats are happening, all threats should be reported to law enforcement. Wouldn't touch it, right? Because they know it's wrong. But they also want to do it because right. they want to be able to discourage people like me from testifying, from speaking out, because it riles up the base and it riles up that lizard brain part of our brain that is this attack, hate, divide. They want to rile that up. And then encourage people to then go harass others to try to silence them and harm them.
It's interesting because in this case, you're taking on the trolls. So is that something you would normally advise against, or you would say, be selective about it?
Your time is valuable. Where do you want to spend it? If that feels like good and what you want to do is fight back against the trolls, have at it. Because sometimes there are days where I do it and I'm like, let's play with them. And I feel like a cat with a ball of yarn or something. And then there are days where I'm like, I just don't care. I'm at a beach right now. I don't care. I feel bad for you that you are sitting here screaming at me. And I have programs like Block Together, Block Party, and all sorts of other Twitter blocking things. I actually can't see it. So you can yell at me all you want. I'm enjoying the ocean right now. I feel bad for you. Just remember, every time you engage, they're not paying. You don't make anything out of this. Your time is worth something. And get paid for your time. Go write an article about it. Get paid for that.
I'll ask you to complete the sentence. My wish for every other woman is...
My wish for every other woman is that you have the space and the power and their resources and ability to be as remarkable and creative and stunning and thoughtful and liberated as you would like to be.
You have all of the answers when you ask the right questions. Be visible. Speak your truth. Every other woman needs you to lead. Voice Lessons is produced, written, and spoken by me, Kim Cutable. It's also produced and edited by Sergio Miranda and associate produced by Jessica Manalga. You can find out when we post new episodes when you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. And if you liked what you've heard, we would love it if you leave us a review. For other inspiration, updates, and show notes, subscribe at voicelessonspodcast.com. Thank you.